Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 21st, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the climate hawk and author, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. And we're also pleased to be joined by the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good. Good to have you both on board. So we spent some time last show talking about the divestment decisions made, particularly in New York City, but by New York City and the state of New York, which, at least in my humble opinion, are pretty consequential things. We have very big-ticket funds shedding their fossil fuels. It's also very symbolic to have the city of New York walking away from fossil fuels. It represents a recognition that climate change will impact places like New York City. But tell me, DR, let me ask you, New York City at least did something in addition to just deciding they're going to divest their fossil fuel holdings, right? So they're going to sell their stocks in Exxon, right? That's one thing. Mm-hmm. What else did they do that people ought to know about?
Bill de Blasio announced that New York City is going to sue the big five oil companies, ExxonMobil, Chevron, BP, ConocoPhillips, and Royal Dutch Shell, to recoup the damages that New York City sustained during Superstorm Sandy. Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, is arguing that Exxon and these other four companies knew, based on research from Inside Climate News and the LA Times and other entities, that they knew the damage their products would cause, their emissions would cause, and obscured that damage, slowed down efforts to reduce emissions, and are therefore responsible for the climate-related damages caused by Superstorm Sandy, and therefore they should pay up, that the taxpayers should not be on the hook for that, that the entities that caused the problem should pay for the damages caused by their own products. It's obviously modeled off to the various lawsuits against Big Tobacco several years ago.
Wow. Okay, so Mariah, what should people think about that?
Yeah, I mean, so for sure, Exxon knew, way back in the 70s and 80s that climate change was that burning fossil fuels was going to cause some climate effects, even to the point I've read in a couple of places that they started sort of, saying, oh, wait, the Arctic might open up for for us to obtain fossil fuels from it.
Did they tap the ships with their fingers together when they
exactly
that?
Right? it's the evidence is, I think, pretty compelling that Exxon had a good idea that climate change was going to be changing the state of the planet. And it's interesting if you sort of link that to, okay, so let's talk about the big bombogenesis bomb cyclone that Boston just had.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, you've talked a little bit, Ted, about sort of the physics behind all of that. But, essentially the jet stream weakened and caused this bombogenesis. And the jet stream weakening, I actually was trying to think of how to sort of describe this jet stream weakening. And have you guys ever been on a tilt-a-whirl, I don't like them, so I haven't been on one. But right, the centrifugal force keeps you on the edge of the tilt-a-whirl, right? Mm-hmm. And if it were to slow down, you would fall off the sides. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Pretty
so
much.
The physics here do not match up. I know it's a very different phenomenon, but the cold temperatures in the Arctic basically keep the jet stream flowing sort of the way, that a tilt-a-whirl keeps all the people under the sides. And if the coldness drops in temperature, that force weakens the jet stream. And then the jet stream starts to wander all over. It just kind of separates and splits. And so you have all this cold air going to places that aren't used to getting cold air. And that means that it's very likely Boston will continue to get these really intense storms like we just had this bombogenesis. And it makes it ripe for us to sort of start saying, maybe we should put up a lawsuit against Exxon, who knew that the Arctic was going to possibly melt from the burning of fossil fuels. And now here we are with, you know, these really crazy storms. I mean,
but how would you, if I'm the Exxon lawyer, I'm the silver tongued devil from Exxon with a 3-piece suit on, I'm going to say that you cannot prove that that particular storm came from carbon atoms that Exxon let into the air. I mean, do you think there's a way to make that kind of specific damage connection? I mean, I think that's the heart of the suit, right?
So they can't they? I don't know. I probably don't have the science right, but I have a feel they know that they're able to trace 2/3 of the carbon dioxide emissions to the companies that are making them, right? I don't know if there's some sort of an imprint or something, right?
Well, they know that the 2/3 of the amount of carbon dioxide in the air can be traced back to something like the last 30 years in something like 100 companies that have pushed this upon us unwittingly, like cigarettes into society. Yeah.
So they have that information. I'm sure that it will be fought tooth and nail to say you can't prove that carbon dioxide molecule came from my company. But I think nevertheless that there is, you know, that information. And then there's, you know, as the science gets better and better, they are starting to be able to prove that, yes, when the Arctic melts, I think it's pretty new research out of Columbia, I believe, that says, yes, as we have the loss of sea ice in the Arctic and the extreme melting of snow in May and June in the high Arctic, it's shifting the climate in a way that's weakening the jet stream and meander.
I think that you're right. There is science that can basically take into account enough factors even in particular weather events to say that there are extraneous factors, you know, there's certain levels of things that are attributed to climate change created differences for certain storms. I think you can make the case for Hurricane Harvey. I mean, Houston should be doing it. Grayson should be doing it. DR, you were talking about Los Angeles actually going ahead and making some kind of a suit like this?
Los Angeles City Council, two members of the Los Angeles City Council are pushing for Los Angeles to file a similar lawsuit against the Big Five oil companies, basically saying that their emissions are responsible for the wildfires and the mudslides that have just caused a devastating impact on California. Uh-huh. But to the point that both you and Mariah have made, Bill de Blasio was interviewed recently by NPR. And there's an interesting exchange where the interviewer raised the question similar to the question that came up in the Kivalina versus ExxonMobil case and the Comer versus Murphy Oil case, raising the question why.
Remind me what Kivalina was,
Kivalina was the Alaskan village that sued Exxon and other companies, saying that their residents were being displaced by climate change. Okay. And Comer versus Murphy Oil was the lawsuit in which victims of Hurricane Katrina sued major oil companies, saying that their emissions caused Katrina. Okay. And the arguments that were used to throw out those cases were arguments that the interviewer, you know, made reference to when she asked de Blasio, why is it that the lawsuit that the defendants are limited to the Big Five oil companies? Wouldn't you also have to introduce, say, the government of India, the government of China, the major, you know, the auto mm-hmm. companies that were involved in, if you remember, the Global Climate Coalition back in the 80s that sued to sort of sabotage the IPCC. And it is an interesting question. De Blasio responded by saying that the Big Five oil companies were the tip of the spear in leading the denialism movement. But you can make an argument that the defendants, at the very least, should also include some of the major coal industries in the United States, because certainly they're also involved in you know, trying to block action.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting a theory of law that may have more credibility as the science advances. I mean, once you can sort of attribute a particular weather event to particular climatic effects, then it's just a question of connecting the climatic effects to Rex Tillerson, right? Which I think you can probably, and so I guess then the other question is, do you think, Mariah, do you think this is symbolic? case? I mean, much like the divestment issue, which begins symbolically, do you think that they really have a hope of getting money out of Exxon? And why would de Blasio or the Los Angeles take on what is sort of politically charged, right? Spend city money to sue Exxon. I'm sure he could get some heat for doing something like that, right? I mean, he must be pretty confident that most of the voters of New York City agree with his opinion, right?
Yeah, I mean, one would hope, because certainly, right, he's a public servant. He should be looking out for the interests of his constituents, and they are being affected by this. And, you know, do I think it's going to work, or do I think it's symbolic is a tough question. You know, I have to believe that the moral arc of the universe bends toward justice, right? I mean, you have to believe that. And of course, you have to work for that too. But then it's also, you sort of wonder, well, it all depends on who the judges are. Where does the case get trialed? Is it going to be tried with a, you know, in a place where the judges are more sympathetic? Is it going to be tried in you know, right. Houston or whatever? I don't know if Houston's the right example, but, you know, so I think all of those things are definitely big ifs.
I think you make a good point, though, is that at some level, de Blasio is protecting the city of New York by going after the people that he regards as doing damage to it, to the city of New York, right? He's protecting the money of New York City, because there's a whole lot of money at stake to fix the subways right after Hurricane Sandy. And to say, you know, there's a reasonable chance that they can get it from someone else is probably worth the investment.
And even if you just think about the fact, you know, that my husband's company very rarely shuts down. And when we had this recent storm, winter storm, Grayson, his company was closed for 2 days. That's 2 days of lost business for that company, right? And of course, his was not the only, right? So many companies shut down for those days, and that's lost business. Right. And, you know, I think it will be harder to pin down companies who can say, look, we didn't know that burning fossil fuels was going to cause climate change. And there was so much speculation and it wasn't proven. But then when you have companies like Exxon, which, as DR mentioned, that Inside Climate News report was so really dug in there deeply and found a lot of good information that Exxon really was talking about the emerging science around climate change and burning fossil fuels and how the two were related initially with good intent, which they then sort of switched around in ways that they shouldn't have. And that, to me, is a case that is an egregious neglect of care and concern for the public.
Wow. I like that. An egregious, I'm going to write that down. Egregious neglect. Well, so DR, I got one more question for you. I heard recently that Ford is going to make a big investment in electric vehicles. So do you think that's because they're being noble, or do you think it's because they're trying to avoid a lawsuit? Because they could very easily wind up in somebody's crosshairs on these kind of lawsuits we're talking about. Tell me, what did Ford do with its $11 billion, or at least promise to do with its $11 billion?
They've announced that they're going to invest $11 billion in electrifying its vehicle fleet by 2022, and they're basically want to have essentially every single car that they produce. My understanding is that they want every single car that they produce to have an electric version, and ultimately going, you know, the goal is to ultimately go fully electric. And obviously it's less about nobility than about pressure. CNBC notes that they're under pressure from China, from Europe, and from California to have cleaner vehicles. And they're also see, you know, the rising success of Elon Musk. And they also know that, you know, Elon Musk could very well eat their lunch if they don't successfully compete. The same recognition of GM that they have to beat Elon Musk before Elon Musk beats them. And it basically goes to show you that, you know, sometimes market forces can, in fact, play a significant role in doing the right thing.
I mean, yeah, I can't remember. I think it was Volvo, right? I mean, there's another. There's just so many companies that are saying, look, we're going all electric here. You know, as DR, you mentioned some too. And really, if the car companies want to compete, they have to do it. It's really not an option. People are going to want an electric vehicle if it means that it can, you know, they don't have to fill it with gas all the time, and mm-hmm. and the infrastructure supports that. And you know, then you look at the Tesla Roadster that can go to zero to 60 in less than 2 seconds and gets what 600 miles to a charge and can drive over 250 miles per hour. And you think, actually, I just want an electric vehicle because it's a really nice car.
Yeah. It's as though the Tesla is actually built Ford tough.
Well, there you go. Well, I think it should give us hope that despite all the I don't know what the right word is, all the stuff happening in Washington, D.C., these market forces are at work, right? The market's mm-hmm. not sleeping, and we hopefully will come out of the other end here better off than we went in. All right, so we got to put it down there. We got to put our foot on the regenerative brake on our electric vehicle podcast, our electric podcast here. What we'll do is we'll put up some links to things we talked about at the blog. Is at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can find a lot of other stuff there, as a matter of fact. But certainly, if you look for us, we'll be there on that page. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, etc., etc., Podbean, SoundCloud, and, of course, on iTunes. If on iTunes you give us a rating, it pushes us up in the ratings. That would be a good thing. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.